You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. This week, the news was dominated by a story from an online political publication, Michigan Advance. Reporter Allison Donahue wrote about an exchange with State Senator Pete Lucido. Lucido, while giving a tour to a class of high school boys, reportedly told Donahue the boys could have a lot of fun with her. That story has been picked up by national media. With us for our Friday news roundup are a couple of reporters who also spend their time in the state political press pool. Kathy Gray is a reporter with the Detroit Free Press, and Emily Lawler is a reporter with MLive. Both of you, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us.
So for those listening who may not be from Shelby Township, I mean, who is Pete Lucido?
Well, Pete Lucido is a lawyer who has been in the legislature for a while. He won a seat in the Senate. He's pretty loud. He's pretty brash. He's a big voice in the Senate.
The investigation into this incident is ongoing. What does he stand to lose from this if leaders decide that he truly was at fault?
You know, it's not really clear. The Senate's doing an investigation right now, which is sort of a personnel action, and typically they don't make the results of those public, although I think that since there's so much public interest around this, it might get a little bit of a different treatment. But, you know, obviously leadership decides things like chairmanships. He chairs a pretty powerful committee in the Senate. There could be consequences, and I think he's already, as you mentioned, facing some backlash nationally and getting a lot of attention that I'm sure that he'd rather not be getting right now.
And there are other consequences that have happened for other legislators who have gotten into trouble, but those usually are associated with criminal charges. That includes loss of staff. It includes loss of office space. So there are some pretty serious consequences for some folks. Now, there isn't anything criminally suggested here, so I don't know if it would rise to that level.
How surprised were Capitol reporters to hear this story?
I mean, I said after it happened on Twitter, and I think, you know, a lot of people, it resonated with a lot of people that I wish it were the first time I had heard anything like this. I wish it were totally unique to my experiences and to the experiences of other women covering the Capitol. But, you know, unfortunately, it's not. And it's not just people covering the Capitol either. I think that a lot of staffers have come out with their own statements after this incident. And unfortunately, I think this is kind of an undercurrent in Capitol culture. It can be. You know, the Capitol is a place that sometimes you're in, I don't want to say intimate situations, but, you know, strange situations. It's not a 9-to-5 workplace. Sometimes you're in session until 4 or 5 in the morning. You're having conversations with people that are, you know, kind of, I guess, slap happy at that hour.
And people's barriers are down on both sides.
Exactly, exactly. And there's so much, you know, networking that goes on outside of the Capitol walls, too, that I think sometimes those barriers that you might have in a typical 9-to-5 workplace get eroded.
And it wasn't necessarily a surprise that it happened. It was a surprise to read about it because we all talk to each other about things that have happened to us as we've covered these politicians. But, you know, most of us roll our eyes, walk away, and talk to each other about it and don't write about it.
We should mention this incident happened in a 9-to-5 situation. This was not one of those overtime moments in which everyone is sort of reaching for the coffee and battling exhaustion. The Capitol Press Corps has become increasingly female in recent years. The fact that we're able to invite you both here is testament to that. The governor the governor of the state of Michigan is the woman, and Gretchen Whitmer is certainly not the first. Have these factors made any difference in the tone of the room?
It has, and it's made us all very much more aware of the language we use and the language that other people use. And we've been finding that the language that some legislators have been using about the governor and about the attorney general is much different than the language that they would use about previous male governors. And I think as a female reporter, we're much more sensitive to those types of things and that type of language than perhaps our predecessors were.
Yeah, and I would just say on a personal level, it's been empowering to show up at a chamber and have other women there, frankly, other female reporters there. You know, there was a time when I think that the Capitol Press Corps was maybe me and Kathy and Danielle Emerson, maybe, with Gongwer. And that was it, right? So, you know, 90% of press scrums that I was in, I was the only woman. And I think that it's just been really empowering to have that change a little bit and have, you know, maybe everyone be the shortest one at the press conference once in a while. I feel like sometimes just even physically getting to the front of a scrum when you're 6 inches shorter than anyone else can be hard.
That's a moment, yeah.
Well, and you know, we think about different things also. So I think that the questions that are asked might be a little bit different. The back and forth with politicians, I think, might be a little bit different with women who are there at the front of pack too.
You know, the heat and light around this verbal exchange between Allison Donohue and Pete Lucido somewhat obscured the fact that she went to ask him about his presence in a Facebook group. It's a group that opposes Governor Gretchen Whitmer, in which some violent comments were made. And it seems like they never got to finish that conversation. But could I just ask you a little bit about how big a story that is, given the other political context of the year?
Well, that particular Facebook page I had not seen, and it got deleted before I saw it. And it showed up in the Metro Times in Detroit. And it hasn't gotten a whole lot of attention since then, just because it's been deleted. And I'm sure that there's going to be something that's resurrected, and perhaps that will become a story too. But, you know, we all look at our social media pages and the social media at the Free Press and look at the comments on that. And I guess we've almost become a little bit a nerd to that because we see those types of comments. I get those types of emails all the time.
Right.
So,
and we should say Pete Lucido, when asked about this, said that he had not spent a lot of time on the page, that he posted things there, but he said he didn't really keep up with what was going on. That was his response when asked by another news outlet about that.
Yeah. Like Kathy, I didn't get to see the page when it was active, but would just say that, you know, I think she's right that there's a level of vitriol in political communications across social media, across our emails, across comments that maybe make it in some ways not as surprising.
Well, and the thing that's really disturbing is that it becomes really ugly when they're talking about women politicians and, you know, the things that readers feel that it's okay to say to me in an email. It just blows my mind sometimes.
I wonder if everything we've learned this week kind of gives us a little different flavor for the political season in 2020.
Huh. You know, I guess it could. I think that certainly there's a little bit of a reckoning going on within the state capitol. I don't know how much that translates into, you know, candidates who will be coming to our state presidentially, I'm sure, in very short order. We've got a March primary. But I think that the tone might change a little bit politically and that, you know, there could be a lot of people who are even just thinking about their personal interactions right now. And that could have implications for our coverage.
Emily, you alluded to this, but the ethics investigation into Pete Lucido's exchange may be held private. And we may never really know what the leadership knows about this. Is that a problem?
Are we talking FOIA? Is this our FOIA conversation?
We're getting there. That was what I was leading to. The Michigan House is considering a bill right now that would speed up the flow of information under Michigan's Freedom of Information Law, and it would strike the fees associated with those requests.
Yeah, so Michigan is rare among states, extremely rare among states, that our legislative branch and our governor's office are not subject to the Freedom of Information Act, which if you don't know what that is, it's a tool that reporters and others use to get public documents. For instance, I use it a lot on state agencies who are subject to the Freedom of Information Act to get things like contracts or legal documents that I'm interested in.
Anyone can make use of these laws.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, they're kind of referred to as sunshine laws because they do put some light on areas that may otherwise be obscure.
Right.
And, you know, as a journalist, I think that having that tool in my toolbox for the legislature and the governor's office, like I have it in my toolbox for state agencies, would be helpful.
Well, and the House may be considering something like this, it is going to be a much tougher climb in the Senate. The House has already passed a wide range of bills that would open up the governor's office and the legislature to the FOIA laws, and the Senate hasn't even, I don't think there's even been a committee hearing on it. And I'm not sure there's going to be, leadership is not interested in this at all.
It's hard to shine the spotlight on yourself, and I think that's a consideration that inherently is part of this process for lawmakers.
Peel back the curtain a little bit. How much money are we talking when you file a Freedom of Information request?
It can range widely. I mean, there are agencies that give you the information without any cost at all, and then there are other agencies that will charge hundreds of thousands of dollars for a document request.
Hundreds of thousands?
Oh, absolutely.
Depending on the size of the document, I assume.
I think that the Detroit News just did an investigation of the amount of money that people were overpaying in their property taxes, and I think the figure I saw was about $220,000 that their FOIA request would have cost. And they were able to get the data themselves.
Yeah. The thing that caught my attention is that agencies will now have 10 days to comply. Have you heard anything from state agencies or officials about whether they can meet that standard?
I have not, but I would not be surprised if every single FOIA that I've ever filed, I've always gotten a letter back saying they need an extension from the time that they have now, which I think is about 10 days or more, and nobody ever meets that initial deadline.
Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey has said that when the independent investigator who's been looking into the Pete Lucido situation gets back to him, the initial indication is it's going to remain private. What could possibly have that be cracked open for the rest of us to see? Pressure from the rest of the legislature?
Well, what they're saying is that there is no precedent to release something like that. The only thing that the Senate Business Office, which is investigating this matter, releases is financial information, financial documents, and that personnel information just has never been released before. So I don't expect the report to be released. I do expect that if there are consequences that result from this, I do expect that there will be some sort of release of any consequences that Senator Lucido might face.
So we'd hear about what will happen to him, but we might not hear about why exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
How problematic is it? I mean, we've had an account of this both from Allison Donahue and a couple of other people who have confirmed the tone of the exchange. But it sounds like we may just never know what happened here.
Well, and there's no way that we'll be able to get at that if they decide not to release it, which they can. Because unless somebody leaks it to us, which is always a possibility, the legislature isn't subject to FOIA. So we can't FOIA the document to see exactly what these investigators found.
And Kathy mentioned there's just not precedent for the legislature releasing personnel actions. They have released financial documents under request, but you know, it would be unusual for them to do so, though I'm not sure if there's something barring them officially.
Hey, both of you, thanks for coming in and talking with us this week.
Well, thank you for having us.
Hey, thank you.
Emily Lawler is a political reporter with MLive, and Kathy Gray is a politics reporter for the Detroit Free Press.